I'm Ben Calhoun, and I produce Patriot Games.
First, let's just get an update about some brass tacks, who won the race, the primary and the general, and that kind of thing for people who might not know that much about Michigan politics.
The Republican, the party candidate, Benishek, he ended up winning. The Tea Party guy, he had some Tea Party support, Benishek did. It was sort of messy the way a lot of the Tea Party stuff is. But he won out over the other conservative and the Democrat. So now he's in Congress.
And your story came out when in relation to the election?
Just on the eve of the election. If I'm remembering right, it was the weekend before. We actually wanted to run it a little bit further out, just, you know, to not be so close and to do such a big story about a race like that.
Mm-hmm.
But just the timing and logistic-wise, it worked out that way that it ran the weekend before.
What did you think the story was going to be going into planning and executing this piece, and how did that change?
Well, I mean, in terms of that show, I was doing a lot of the production for the election show, so we knew we wanted to do something on Tea Party, so I was calling around an awful lot. I think I looked into something like 8, 9, 10 races, but it was when I talked to Rich, the main subject in the story, and he told me that, because I asked him how things were sort of shaking out and whether there were tensions over the whole, you know, where the Tea Party support was going and this and that, and he said to me, well, my best friend's not talking to me. And I knew right then that, one, he was very candid, and two, you know, just the way that he was talking about it, it seemed very personal in the kind of way that I felt like so much of the Tea Party coverage had not been. So I talked to him about all that quite a bit before going out to Michigan, just about the chapter of the Tea Party that they'd founded and his history with his best friend, Tom. And so, yeah, when I got out there, I knew a lot of sort of the lay of the land in terms of who was who in their chapter and who were the people that I wanted to talk to. But I certainly had no idea what was going to happen with the campaign, the developments with him getting fired and just all the interpersonal drama that by chance took place while I was there.
And getting it all on tape.
Yeah, that was unexpected too.
What were you thinking when that phone call came in while you were talking to Rich?
I felt like I had not been able to pin down sort of the political mechanics of what was going on with Rich's situation. And that was the last day that I was there. He'd been fired, and I felt like I hadn't been able to get him to sort of process it with me. And then when he got that phone call, I had no idea he was going to get any phone call of any kind. We were just doing an interview together, and he randomly got a call from the Republicans' campaign, and they just proceeded to have that whole conversation. And I felt like, you know, in us talking about it afterwards, it was the catalyst that allowed him to sort of come to terms with the whole thing. But to have that phone call come in and just sort of watch the political pressures work on him was, I covered politics for a long time. I feel like it's so rare that you get to be in the room for something so frank and raw.
Exactly. So you must have just been thinking, oh, this is so great.
Well, I wondered just personally because, you know, I'd gotten to know Rich so well, and I like Rich. I mean, just personally, I think he's a really nice guy. I was just genuinely curious what he was going to tell them, you know? I was surprised by what he ultimately decided. I thought he was going to tell him to take a hike and that he, you know, wouldn't be any part of anything like that.
Well, it brings me to another question. So here you are, you're at this pinnacle of your story and at an incredibly tense time for him, for the race, for your story, and you have to come back at him after this conversation that you're listening to and confront him with what it seems to be a complete about face. How did you keep your composure at that time and keep your head clear to move forward in that gently confrontational way?
It's weird because it went on for such a long time, my conversation with him about that. And we just kept working it over, and he kept saying these contradictory things. But as much as I feel like there was a confrontational element to it, I felt like Rich and I were really kind of together getting at one of the things that really interests me about politics, because I feel like so many of these political structures, you know, they're built by people and they're so human. Like when you read documents like the Constitution or, you know, petitions or things like that, there's all this really sort of idealistic intent on the front end. But then the institutions that get built are so not people friendly, and the process is not people friendly. And so for Rich trying to figure out how to operate in that, I honestly, like, there was a huge part of me that felt like that conversation was me working through that with him, you know, as somebody who had watched him go through this and, you know, cared about him as a person, and, you know, that we were sort of hashing it out together in a genuine way, not that I was kind of, you know, forcing it out of him.
Although there is does come a point, I think it's right there, where he says, you know, you might have to turn that off.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what it felt like in that moment. I mean, we had just, in our conversations, we'd struggled, you know, in moments like that that had happened during taping where, you know, he kind of wanted to step off stage to process everything. You know, it ended up being a trust issue. At least in retrospect, and maybe this is a too flattering way to characterize it, is I feel like it was me asking him to trust me to process this with the mic still on, as opposed to me refusing to do what he wanted to. And maybe it's, you know, it's probably somewhere in between, but it felt like that. At least it does the way I remember it.
Well, you know, the judges were really impressed with the amount of access that you had and the amount of trust that you got from your subjects. And I don't know how long you were there, but how did you cultivate that? And once you cultivated it, how do you maintain your distance and your neutrality?
That was actually, it was a layer of drama that didn't make it into the story. But the first day that I showed up in Michigan, I went to the meeting for the Tea Party chapter that Rich and Tom, the two main guys, the best friends in the story, the one they'd founded together. I'm sitting next to the person that's replaced Rich, because they've kicked Rich out at this point. And I'm sitting next to him, and he's got an email in front of him. It goes out to the whole group, and it's all about how none of them should trust me, and nobody is allowed to talk to me. So I was, like, sitting at this table, and I was like, well, boy, I really have an uphill slog on this one. But, you know, I feel like there was a lot of taking the time to listen to them. And I think that that's a big part of what was going on with the whole Tea Party thing, is that people felt like they weren't being listened to. And if you listen to their, in a genuine way, they sort of would meet you on different terms. And I feel like that's a lot of what happened. Then a lot of it was just time. I mean, I was with Rich pretty much all day long, every day for a week, which is how long I was there.
Wow. Just the fact that he was sending around this email while you were sitting there saying, do not trust this guy, do not reveal your secrets. At the end, they're basically asking your advice.
Yeah. I did another political story for This American Life out of Wisconsin a little while ago, and there was a Tea Party guy there, and he was working one of these, like, when they had the recall elections in Wisconsin, he was working a petition booth. And I got there, and in the course of 30 minutes, I hung out with him for 30 minutes, but we started, and he really, really did not trust me. I mean, I feel like in the way that a lot of conservatives don't trust public radio, and, you know, I was just a stranger from another part of the country. But we ended up talking about, like, just his life experiences and why he'd gotten involved in Tea Party stuff. And he told me this whole story about how he'd bought this first house and he'd been fighting with the EPA. And I actually, like, hearing his personal story was so emotional for me. I mean, I felt so genuinely bad for him. And just talking to him as a person, it was like at the end of that 30 minutes, I felt like he respected me and he trusted me. And I had, you know, a huge amount of respect for the amount of trust that he was, you know, showing by just telling me all this personal stuff. And I feel like it was sort of it was a mini version of what happened in Michigan. I felt like over the course of the week with the folks in Michigan, we just built a genuine personal relationship.
And have they heard the final piece, and did they have any comments about it?
Yeah, I have heard from everybody in the story with the exception of Rich, which makes me kind of sad. But I've heard from like Chad Stevens and Tom, and I've heard from everybody in the story. And I mean, it felt like a huge victory when they said to me that they felt like it was fair and even-handed and that they were really pleased with it. And that, you know, kind of most of all, it was true to what had happened. I mean, it's really regretful to me that I haven't heard from Rich, and I actually reached out to him because I'm not just saying it. I really like the guy. He seemed like the kind of person. He knew a lot about the area and the history and the businesses and the local people. Like, he seemed like the kind of person that you'd want in local politics or politics of any kind. And so it makes me sad that I haven't heard from him, and I hope that it doesn't mean that he's sort of like abandoned all that.
Hmm. Do you think that this story speaks to a larger story, either like Tea Party versus GOP, or even speaks to something about politics in general or friendship in general? What's kind of the larger lesson that either you feel like you learned or that the story revealed?
I see parallels between this story and a lot of political stories that I've done, in that I think it was the story of somebody who was propelled into the political system by ideals and good intentions and true belief. And whether you agree with it or not, you know, the kind of belief that you would hope would push people into politics. But then somebody who ended up kind of swirling in the backwaters of the political system and what it does to genuine intentions and beliefs like that. So I think it's that story. I hope it's that story. And I guess the other thing, I mean, just in terms of the specific politics of it, the Tea Party and the GOP, I remember in the coverage of the Tea Party, we felt like there were things that were missing from the coverage of the Tea Party, which is why we wanted to do a Tea Party story. But in the coverage, I remember feeling like there was this idea that the Tea Party was this sort of powder keg that the GOP was just waiting to tap, when, like a lot of fledgling political movements, it felt a lot more like a bumper car arena in some ways. I hope it was also that story, you know, just that when you've got a movement that's starting out like that, inherently so often is just that chaos and, you know, disorganization that ends up being the huge challenge for whatever group is trying to fold that into their political firepower.
Was there any personal effect that the story had on you? Did you come away with it rethinking anything or thinking differently about something?
In the preponderance of the coverage that was done, and, you know, to a larger extent has still been done of the Tea Party, it's kind of been treated as monolithic. And that felt impossible to me, just in terms of what it inherently is, which is this new group of people or people who haven't really been involved in politics getting involved, and kind of this fledgling movement that was defining itself not as part of the whole established conservative wing of American politics. So it felt like something that was really mixed. And it seemed like in a lot of the coverage, there would be little strains of it, you know, that there were, you know, racist undertones, that there were, you know, libertarian philosophies, that there were really traditional, you know, socially conservative factions, and all that stuff was there, but it seemed like people would kind of just dial in on one as opposed to stepping back and taking it as a super mixed bag. And I thought that the best coverage or analysis that I read were the people who included all of that. So it's something that I ended up seeing, and it's something that I ended up really having a fundamental appreciation for. I guess I came away from it just being compelled by the honesty and the dishonesty involved. You know, there's a lot of people who are being, I think, at different times in that situation, dishonest brokers, including, you know, Rich in that final scene, obviously. But then, one, him trusting me to have that last conversation he had with me about it, I think shows also an admirable honesty and a candidness. And, you know, talking to the guy who was on the phone afterwards, the conversation was, you know, kind of an ugly one for him to be publicly part of. But, you know, we had a whole conversation about how I thought that he had made a compelling political case to Rich, and it was the one that convinced Rich to do what he did in the end. And, you know, because of that, he believed in it, you know, being public on at least some level. So I think that was really it. It's just being surprised by people's both honesty and dishonesty in the whole situation.
Just generally speaking, were there any ramifications for anybody in the story? I mean, after something like that, he's talking on the phone. He's basically admitting to, you know, to publicly going on record as spinning the story to really something that was not true. Were there any ramifications of all that?
I'm not sure if anybody was fired or had a job taken away and whatever, you know, in Beneshek's congressional administration over that whole thing or anything like that. I did talk to Tony, the guy who was on the phone, you know, after the story came out, and, you know, he had some, you know, sort of hairs to split with me about how it came across in the story. But at one point, I remember saying to him in that conversation, like, look, like, I also think that there are people, you know, as sad as it might be, in Washington who would pay you good money to to twist people's arms in the way that you're twisting people's arms on that tape, you know? So as sad as that is, like, I actually think that, like, I feel like, you know, perhaps there were ramifications on a personnel level, but I'm not aware of them. And I don't think that necessarily people, you know, are probably frowning on it totally.
Right. And just to clarify, I mean, you recorded that, and as long as one person agrees to record a conversation, it's legal, right? Is that right?
Not in Michigan. And Rich had said when Rich picked up the phone, Rich put the phone call on speakerphone, and he told Tony that I was there and we were recording.
Oh.
I mean, I did call Tony after the whole conversation because I was concerned that there would be any lack of clarity, because that is the law in Michigan. It's a two consent state. So I called him and talked to him about it. And, you know, we just clarified that he did know that that was the case.
Wow. He knew at the beginning of that conversation it was being recorded. That's amazing. Anyway, I want to get an idea. How many hours of tape did you record?
Oh, my gosh. A lot. I was with Rich pretty much every day for a week, and rolling, I would say, anywhere between 6 and 7 hours of tape on some days. Some days more, some days a little bit less. But I think I had in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 hours of tape when I got back.
How fast was the turnaround on this piece?
So I was out there for a week, and then I got back, and I think I had a week and a half. It was a week and a half.
Wow. How did you approach synthesizing this gigantic issue and this big story down to a small story?
That's a tough question. In terms of this story, I was looking at a certain premise. So every race that I looked at had the premise of the party Republican candidate and then a Tea Party candidate who was threatening to peel off some support, because that seemed like ideologically plugging into the bigger story of what was happening with the Republican Party and the Tea Party that year. That seemed thematically where the most interesting sort of, you know, fulcrum of the whole thing was. So that was what I looked at. And then the strategy that I end up trying to use is to zoom in and zoom out all the time. I feel like this is what I try to do, and what I tried to do in Michigan, is, you know, go in with as much background as I can, and then once I'm in the situation, be watching the detail of what's happening and how the narrative is unfolding, but also have these moments where I force myself to step back and really zoom out and try to see the whole field. And I think it can be, I mean, it's something that I really struggle with, but I think that that's basically what I push myself to do when I'm working on a story like that.
But then you also have to do it for the listener. I mean, you're saying you do it as a reporter, that you like are doing the micro but thinking about the macro all the time. But mm-hmm. then you have to explain it to the listener in the same way, don't you?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I can take partial credit for that, and then, you know, the rest of it I want to, you know, push over to the editors that I've been able to work with, you know, like my editor at WBEZ when I was there, and now here at This American Life, like, you know, Julie Snyder and Ira Glass are amazing in that respect. And I feel really blessed to be, you know, in a situation where I would be processing a story like that with them, and I would push that credit over their way. I think that what made the story work ultimately was just that I was able to talk to people like people. You know, I feel really lucky that I'm at a show that gave me the time to spend out there and just spend lots of time with all of the people involved in this situation, to the point that I had a deep understanding of where they were coming from and what the situation was, and ultimately that they had a level of trust in me to handle that.
I actually have one more question for you. To your knowledge, are Rich and Tom still estranged?
I haven't talked to Tom in a while. He calls me every once in a while just to chat. But I haven't heard from him in a few months now. And at least the last I knew, they were still not talking, which is pretty sad.
Well, especially since it seems like, I mean, it's gotten kind of complex, but at the crux of it, it's kind of cut and dried and black and white.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like it would be that difficult, but it clearly, you know, they're not really interested.
Yeah. I didn't totally understand their friendship in some way, just because I've never really seen adults that were friends in the way that they were. Like, they were friends as if they were in fifth grade. They would call each other 5, 6, 7 times a day. So I don't know. There was something kind of childlike in a way about their friendship, but it made it one that had like the kind of falling out that you can only really have with somebody that you're super duper close to.